When I was 14, my high school thought it would be a good idea to take a bunch of us New York City kids into the Catskills for a day. The idea was to introduce us to nature, since some of us had spent our entire lives living in the concrete jungle that is New York City. Seriously, a lot of us had only ever seen forests and farms on the TV or in movies, and now that I'm older, I realize how potentially damaging that is. I honestly feel like human beings are supposed to be in contact with nature, that it makes us happier, healthier, and gives us a sense of place. But I'll quit my rambling and get on with the story. So one super early morning, we load onto our school bus for the drive out into the Catskills. This is in like November too, so it was still dark when I got up, and the sun had barely risen when the driver got us on the road. I was excited at the time. I had aspirations to be in the military, and the idea of getting to wander around the woods was such a cool concept to me at the time. In the end, it actually turned out to be pretty boring and really tiring. We walked for hours and hours with our teacher telling us about different kinds of trees, animals, and weather systems that the area was home to. But we didn't even really get to see any of those animals aside from the odd squirrel that was squirreling away nuts. It turns out some of them don't hibernate at all, unlike a lot of woodland creatures. Like I said, it was all much more boring than I first thought. That was, right up until I saw something carved into a tree. It was carved in really deep, obviously with some kind of knife or something, right through the bark and into the wood. I'd never seen anything like it before, and it wasn't like I wasn't a smart kid. I used to read about different religions and occult stuff quite a lot, so I was pretty confused as to what it was. To describe it, it looked like a rough figure eight, but with like dots and lines carved around it in certain places, so that it kind of looked like an octopus, only not at all at the same time. I know that makes literally zero sense, and I wish this was when camera phones were a thing, because I'd probably still have the pictures with me to link people to. Out of curiosity, I call my teacher over and ask her if she recognized it. She gives the thing pretty much the same look as I figured I had, just having no idea what she's looking at, then obviously tells me no, that she's never seen anything like it before. But that in all likelihood, it's something a hunter carved into the trees so they wouldn't get lost. I'd not really heard of anyone doing that before, but I kind of figured she knew best, so I dropped the whole thing and just followed the group as we walked on. After a little while, we ended up walking right to the edge of a cliff face near a mountain. It was this huge wall of rock that just seemed to rise up out of the earth, covered in moss and stuff. Our teacher starts pointing at the rock and telling us how we can tell how old it is by the different kinds of rock that the thing was made up of, but few of us were really listening. I only really started paying attention myself as we walked along the cliff face, and I saw something familiar on it. Something big, too. It was the same symbol we'd seen carved into the tree, only like I said, this one was much, much bigger. Again, I showed our teacher, only this time, she didn't seem so calmly curious, and she seemed as freaked out as I did. Not only that, but the entire class saw it this time, but with it being the first time seeing it, they weren't nearly as scared, just the same curious I was. I asked the teacher quietly who might carve something like that into the rock, who might have the time or the skills or the equipment. She just told me she didn't know, but not to mention the ones that we'd seen carved into the trees. Plural. She used the plural, and it honestly scared me more than it should have. I'd only seen the one carved into the tree, but she'd obviously seen a lot more than I had. I just found myself hoping we'd be heading back soon. It was early afternoon by that time, and I wondered just how scary the woods would be after dark. Thankfully, I started heading back towards the bus not long after eating lunch. A little while into our walk, one kid stops the teacher and tells her he needs to go to the bathroom. It wasn't an ideal situation by any means, but with the kid being a dude, it was pretty easy to remedy. Teacher just tells him to go into the bushes nearby and deal with it, so he does. A few minutes later, we hear him tearing through the bushes back towards us, panting as he ran. He emerges with this terrified look in his eyes, like I've never seen anyone so scared before, not in real life. The teacher runs over and starts asking him what the deal is, but he can hardly get his words out. He just keeps breathing real fast, in and out, like rocking back and forth on the spot like he was losing his mind. The teacher is telling him to breathe, calm down and focus, and tell us what he saw. What he said shook our group to the core.
There was a man, a real old man, or not so old. He had white hair and a beard, and he didn't have any clothes on, but he was covered in, like, tattoos. Oh, my God. Oh, God, what if he saw me? What if he's following us?
The teacher had to quiet the kid before a full-blown panic attack took over the group, and we hurried back to the bus without stopping to look at anything at all. Nothing else happened on the walk back to the bus, but thank God. But I remember being really curious as to what the kid thought he saw when he went to the bathroom. And I foolishly asked. He told me exactly the same thing, only went into a little more detail about the tattoos and stuff. I asked him if he remembered what they looked like, to draw one of them if he could. He took out a notebook and pen, closed his eyes for a moment so he could really recall. Then he drew something rough that I couldn't quite make out at first, but when he showed it, it was clear. It was a bunch of dots and lines, with a clear figure eight in the middle. For a good few years, I was a teacher at Lansdowne Middle School in Victoria, British Columbia. I loved my job. Teaching wasn't something I'd ever really seen myself doing. It certainly wasn't a career I'd talked about with high school guidance counselors. I kind of fell into it by accident. Long story short, I couldn't get into the college I wanted to, so I had to basically choose between that and nursing, so I chose the one with less blood and guts involved. Every year we take a bunch of grade 8 students up to a place called Camp Barnard at Otter Point, just west of Souk. It's a scout camp built on land gifted by Senator George Henry Barnard, who was a prominent advocate of hunting and outdoor activities in general. There are a lot of fun things for the kids to get up to up at the camp. There's a playing field, a nature trail, a swimming pool, a lake for canoeing and paddleboarding, even an archery range and disc golf course. The kids absolutely adore heading up there for a few days, and there's always a palpable feeling of excitement every year in the run-up to the field trip up there. And I'd be lying if I said I didn't look forward to it too. That kind of stuff really brings out the big kid in me, you know? It was the last week of the school year when we piled onto a bus and drove over to the camp to begin our few days of fun. The weather is normally pretty peachy during that time of year, but last year, there were some unusually strong winds blowing through the camp. This was very disappointing, as it meant that some of the activities would be totally out of the question. You can't play disc golf when the winds can effectively blow your disc right off the entire course, and neither can you paddleboard when your board keeps getting flipped over by choppy waters. That only really left a handful of activities open to the kids, one of which was archery, the other was orienteering. I'll be honest, I was excited to try archery again. I'd tried it the year before the first time, and I'd actually fought to get assigned to it again since I'd just found the whole thing so cool. I had my reservations about the wind, but they were purely minor concerns about it affecting the kids' accuracy. It'd really suck if a few of the more talented archers were unable to nail a bullseye or two thanks to the winds. But these were thin, polycarbon projectiles. I doubted the wind would have any serious effect on them. But it wasn't the wind I had to worry about. You see, we had this one kid with us who was a real klutz. They sucked at sports, always seemed to be that kid who ended up in the nurse's office from falling in the schoolyard. Everybody knows a kid like that, right? And this was our clumsy kid. So the kid, who I won't name to protect their future reputations, steps up to the firing line with their bow and arrow in hand, fires off a couple of terrible shots, but I'm quick to offer encouragement. The instructor even takes a little more time to show him the correct stance. How to stand just right so that the arrow flies straight and true towards its target. But when the kid tries to imitate the instructor, he takes up the goofiest pose I think I'd ever seen. Body turned sideways, legs spread way too far apart, and they even instinctually squatted down as if to try to lower their center of gravity, as if that was going to help in the slightest. Then, just before they're about to shoot off another arrow, this huge, and I mean huge, gust of wind starts tearing its way through the camp, and I watched in horror as the kid began to sway, falling backwards, and shooting his arrow way off target. The instructor kept his cool, managed to keep the kids from freaking out, but immediately shot me a look as if to say, "Time to call it a day." Next came the orienteering, about the only truly safe thing to do during this kind of weather. At least, that's what I thought, anyway. Sure, the maps were flapping away in our hands as we tried to navigate our way around the course, but it was still pretty fun despite the weather. Fun, right up until I heard a crashing sound coming from just over a rise. The kids I was supervising looked around in confusion, their eyes full of fear as they wondered aloud what the sound was. I told them I wasn't sure, and we'd have to wait to check it out once the course had been completed. But that was a lie. I knew. I knew well what it was. I'd heard it before. It was the sound of a tree falling in the woods. It's frankly unmistakable. A deep wrenching sound, then the clacking of the lumber hitting other upright trees before the final crash as it hits the dirt. I had this horrible feeling in my gut. There were kids all over the area, all taking part in the orienteering exercise in small groups, each overseen by a member of the camp or teaching staff. And it was probably the worst moment of my life so far to realize that my worst fears had come true. I saw a kid bounding over the rise, his eyes, these big, white circles beaming out from his terrified face. I called after him, trying to get him to tell me what had just happened, and he didn't say anything. He just sprinted back towards camp as fast as his little legs could carry him. I tried to keep the kids from worrying too much, but they couldn't concentrate on the task at hand. They seemed to know something was horribly wrong just as clearly as I did. So, after a few more minutes of trying to control the situation, I just walked us all back to camp to try to get them settled in their bunks. I'll just cut to the chase at this point. The fallen tree had landed right on one of the kids, who I won't name to protect their family. And, believe it or not, he was dead just moments later from massive chest trauma and asphyxiation. The school district's critical incident response team was deployed on the Wednesday afternoon to support students, staff, and families. But with the yearly graduation ceremony that was only a week away, it was completely ruined for a lot of families, and even those that attended felt a sense of pervading sorrow and loss. And as for me, I've never really gotten over the fact that such horrifically random tragedies can occur to completely innocent children. I took advantage of the free counseling services provided by the school district, but they just didn't seem to help. I found myself looking at kids, wondering what completely random accident would take their lives before they even blossomed into fully grown adults.
This happened when I was in the fifth grade. I was in a science class, and one day we all took a field trip to a science museum. It had a bunch of exhibits and things like that. I really wasn't much of a science fan, but I will admit that I always liked going to the museum because it was pretty fun. We left school and drove down to the museum, which was about 30 minutes away. Once we got there, we did the usual stuff. We were able to kind of split up as a group, as long as we made it back. I went with a few of my friends in the class from one spot to another. Eventually, it was time to get lunch, and then we would leave shortly after that. Our teacher went around letting everyone know we would be leaving in 10 minutes and to meet back at the entrance. I had seen everything I was going to see, so I decided to just go back and get on the bus. That way, I could play some games on my phone until we were going to leave. I left the building into the back parking lot where our bus had dropped us off. I got out there and saw a couple of buses. I started to walk over and saw the bus driver wave me over to him. I got on the bus, but as I did, the bus driver stopped me. He told me there would be no phones on the way back. I was pretty upset to hear this, and I didn't understand why, but I gave him my phone and then sat down. The bus driver then started the engine. I looked out the window and tried to think of why we weren't allowed to have our phones. Sure, sometimes the kids would get out of control with them, but I found this a little bit unreasonable. Just then, I felt the bus start to move. I looked and saw the driver was driving out of the parking lot and down to the street. I called out that the rest of the class was still inside, but he ignored me. Then I got a terrible feeling. I asked him to stop the bus and go back, but he just turned around and yelled at me to shut up. The bus was driving down the street and headed for the freeway. All I could do was look out the window and wonder what exactly was going on. I wished that I hadn't gone to the bus by myself and went back with the rest of the group. The bus driver merged onto the freeway, and we started going at a fairly high speed. The longer we drove, the more scared that I got. Now I knew the real reason he had taken my phone from me. We continued down the freeway for I would say about 5 minutes. Suddenly, I heard the noise of a police siren. I looked behind me and saw a flashing light. The bus started to move to the side of the road, and I saw a police car go with it. That was one of the greatest feelings in my life. The bus driver then opened the door and took off running into the field beside the road. I saw several police officers run after him, and another run to the bus. They were able to get me back to safety, and the bus driver was caught a short time later. Back when I was a kid, we took a school field trip to the zoo one time. My school was really small, and basically the entire place went. It took us over an hour to get there, but when we were there, it was a day-long event, which was nice for us because we didn't actually have to do any schoolwork. I think I was like 8 years old, and I was one of the younger people there. The first part of the day we spent looking for a bunch of animals, then we got food. After that, we started looking more at plants and things like that. I was more into the animals, so my friend Matt and I went back over to them. We first got back to the exhibit of sea lions. And when we got there, one of the zoo workers asked us if we wanted to help feed the animals. Of course we said yes, because as an 8-year-old kid, it seemed like something super fun to do. He told us to follow him and then led us into a doorway and down a dark and quiet hall. It was really weird to be in the back of an exhibit, but it got me really excited to feed the animals. We followed the guy deeper in and into a storage type of room that was even darker. He said this is where they kept the food. He told us to wait there for a second and left the room. Then we saw the door shut and heard it lock. We immediately knew something was wrong. I went to the door and tried to open it, but it was in fact locked. It was a really strong and thick door, and neither of us would be able to break it. We banged on it, but I don't know how anyone else outside would be able to hear. After a while of that with no response, we decided to examine the room. It was very dark with no apparent lights. And we could barely see. It was probably just about 15 feet by 10 feet, and had basically just junk laying around. It just seemed to be another storage closet. We waited and waited, but of course, the guy never came back, and nobody else did either. This was kind of a long time ago, and neither of us had cell phones we could take out to call anyone or anything like that. We just waited in the dark room for what felt like forever. Occasionally, we would yell or bang on the door, but nothing would ever happen. We did this for literally hours. At one point, we stopped and actually fell asleep on the floor for some time. Eventually, we got back up and went back to banging on the door and yelling. At last, finally, we could barely hear someone from the other side. We both yelled as loud as we possibly could. The door tried to open, but was still locked. Then whoever was there went away. We got really disappointed and thought that was it, until a few minutes later we saw the door open. There was another zoo worker and she asked us how we had gotten in there. We told her the story and she seemed really surprised. By that time we saw that the sun was almost set when we got back into the zoo. Apparently everyone had been looking for us for over 2 hours. We were able to get back home later that day. But the guy that worked there and locked us in had left, and nobody could find him. It turns out he was caught a while later, and had been addicted to some drugs or something like that. They said he had been acting really strange lately. I really don't know why he locked us in there, but we were very lucky to get out because that closet wasn't really used by the zoo anymore. This story happened many years ago when I was a boy. I was probably about 9 or 10, and I remember for class we went on a field trip to one of the state parks. It was just a field trip where we were going to walk around and look at the sights and the wildlife. We went on these trips about 4 times a year, and it was always pretty fun. On this day, we went to a park that had a bunch of hills and different types of trees. We were going to walk on a path all around it. There was about 20 of us in the class, and after we all got to the park, our teacher told us to follow him and then led us down the path. I was with my best friend Daryl, and we were talking during the walk. At one point, we saw a cool-looking mushroom a little bit off the path, so we stayed back to look at it. The rest of the class was going uphill, and before we knew it, they were out of sight. We went to run to catch back up with them, but we heard a noise coming from behind a tree off the path. I expected to see an animal, but when we looked, there was a boy there around our age. He had a red shirt and jeans, and he was hiding behind the tree. He wasn't in our class. We asked him who he was, but he didn't answer. We thought maybe he was with another school field trip over here or something like that. Daryl asked him if he was on a field trip, and the boy stepped out from the tree and said, "No, Daryl." Daryl was really surprised that the kid knew his name, and he asked him how he knew. The boy then looked at me and said my name. It was a little strange, this whole thing, and we said we should all go back with our groups. The boy then went back behind the tree. He was definitely sketchy, but we told him he should come with us because we figured he wasn't supposed to be off the path by himself out here. He didn't come out from behind the tree, though, so me and Daryl walked over to him. But when we got behind the tree, the boy wasn't there. It was as if he just vanished into thin air and was gone. Daryl and I looked around for a bit, but then we knew we had to get back to our group, so we ran back. We told our teacher about it, and I know we ended up telling people who worked at the park about the kid, but I never heard anything about it after that. Daryl and I still talk about it sometimes to this day.
This happened a while ago. I have since been diagnosed with PTSD because of this incident. I'm currently on medication to suppress the reoccurring nightmares. For some background, at the time I was only 9 years old. I am a female from Georgia. My mother met my stepfather at a church we recently started attending with her best friend. When this happened, they were just dating. It was a fairly normal church for the most part. It was a somewhat run-down building, with an outdated interior and an old basement. The pastor was an ex-drug addict turned man of God, who was honestly one of the nicest people I've ever met. It was a cold winter night. Saturday church service had just ended. We left the church and headed towards my mom's old Pontiac Vibe. It was the kind of car that didn't have electric locks or windows. Each door had to be locked and unlocked on its own. We sat in the parking lot talking for some time. Since my stepfather lived in a different city back then, he and my mom wanted to maximize their time together. They were discussing upcoming holiday plans when I noticed a figure wearing a green coat moving between the cars parked nearby. I didn't think anything of it at the time, as it could have been our pastor or another churchgoer. My stepdad got into the passenger seat, and we were about to take off, when his door was suddenly pulled open. There was a man in a green hoodie that none of us recognized. He had dark skin, bloodshot eyes, and a shaved head. He looked completely deranged. He shoved a gun into my stepdad's abdomen.
"Give me your wallet,"
he demanded. Mind you, my stepfather is a Hispanic man. He speaks English well now, but he wasn't fluent back then, and he had a thick accent. So he simply responded to the man, "No." My mom began freaking out. I was so scared that I kept trying to get out of the car. I started crying because my mom told me to stay put. Then the man began screaming,
"I said give me your wallet!"
But my stepdad stood firm.
"No."
The man then directed his attention at my mother.
"Tell him I said to give me his wallet."
Thinking that he couldn't understand him, my mother tried to get my stepdad to comply, but he refused. I'm looking frantically through our fogged up windows, trying to find someone to get their attention. But the man looked at me, then back to my mom. He then hit my stepdad with his gun, causing him to lean forward. He then pointed the gun at me, a 9-year-old girl in a pink and black dress who was talking about Christmas dinner just 5 minutes before.
Somebody better give me something, or she dies.
I lost it. I got out of my seat and exited the car. That's when I saw two other hooded men across the parking lot. They were walking towards the car, also carrying guns. I started screaming and immediately got back in the car. My mom yelled at me for getting out, and the man with the gun was still screaming at my stepdad.
Are you listening to me, man? I'm going to shoot her right between the fucking eyes!
My mom then offered him all the cash she had on her. She handed him $75 from her wallet. The man ripped away the cash from her, then assaulted my stepdad again with his gun. The mugger then slammed his arm against the car door to close it, but in the process, the gun went off. The bullet went into the well of my mom's car. The three men ran off into the night. We sat there crying and trying to console each other. After about 30 minutes, we calmed ourselves down and left. We immediately went to the police station and filed a report. They said it was most likely gang activity, and it would be very difficult to track down the perpetrators. The men could have killed my stepfather right in front of my mother. There was no justice. I was only a child when this happened. It's been 13 years, and I still wake up screaming and sweating from the nightmares. I'm just glad that my mom had her grocery money on her that day. Heaven knows what would have happened if she didn't.
So for context, I'm a 22-year-old male, and I live in a large city in the Midwest. Now, I drive for Lyft while putting myself through trade school. I also drive for other similar companies, but that's besides the point. I have many, many horror stories from those as well, but I'll tell those another time. It was Christmas Eve 2020. I was out driving for Lyft for a few hours before heading to my mom's with my new baby and wife. Nothing really special going on for the night, just the usual. I get a ride request. It happened to be a pickup from this kinda lower income apartment complex. No big deal. I arrive, find my passenger, and he has all of his belongings with him. Like several boxes of stuff. Now, my car is a 2006 Chevy Impala, so it's not really too big. We get all of his stuff loaded up, barely, and we're on our way. Now during the ride, the guy was crying and saying that his girlfriend was cheating on him, and he had apparently walked in on them earlier that night. He couldn't stay there because her name was on the lease, so I was taking him to a hotel. Now in my city, we happen to have a street that is pretty well known for having vices. Hookers, drugs, gangs, weapons, and shady motels. You know, the works. We get to the motel and he asks me to wait for him to check in and get his key. No problem, man, I say. I'll confess, I break the rules a little when it comes to Lyft. I have a gun hidden in a concealed holster, secured to the underside of my driver's seat for protection. Reason being, driving Lyft and other contract apps, I've had knives and guns pulled on me, as well as having people try to fight me, rob me, and all kinds of other things. But like I said, stories for another time. This motel was on that street that I had mentioned before. Homeless people were everywhere. There was a dude on the far corner of the complex that still had a needle in his arm, passed right out against the building. And I'm a pretty big fan of true crime and horror narration, so I'm on edge. He gets his key. The whole motel is ground level, so to help the guy out, I drive to his door. As I mentioned before, he had a lot of stuff, so I started to help him unload his stuff. While on my second trip getting stuff, I saw a guy come out of a room just south of my car, then followed by two ladies. They came up to the room I was next to. One of the ladies then pounded on the door, then opened it. That's when I then saw the guy raise a fucking shotgun right out of his long coat and then storm into the room. The two ladies followed him, then slamming the door behind them. Following, I heard a lot of yelling and shouting. I was honestly just waiting for shots to ring out. Out of nowhere, my passenger came up behind me. I can take this man. go ahead and take off. Have a Merry Christmas. And he gave me a cash tip. I didn't even notice that he took the boxes out of my hands or slid a $5 bill in my pocket. I was frozen. I knew what may have been going down in that room. I had to leave, or at least go to where I could get my gun. I know that the guy and the ladies both saw me, and I know that they knew I saw the gun. I just had to get the fuck out of there. You know how it goes. No witnesses. I got in my car, and then sped away as quickly as possible. I got a block or so away, and then called the cops. I gave them every detail I could. After I got off the phone with the police, I signed out a Lyft. I hadn't made much money, but I was done. I got a call later that night. The cops investigated. They never found the gunmen or the women. They never answered the door that I saw them come out of. And the occupants of the room they went into said nothing happened and that I was full of shit. Well, I definitely wasn't. I know what I saw.